Welcome to the Eat, Train, Prosper podcast, where we provide you sustainable training principles for strength and building muscle, effective nutrition practices for improving and maintaining a lean physique, and practical lifestyle habits for becoming a champion of your own health, both inside and out. Hosted by Aaron Straker and Brian Borstein. What's up, guys? Happy Tuesday. Welcome back to another episode of Eat, Train, Prosper. This is episode 106. And kind of like we started to or had planned to last week before we completely derailed our conversation on blood work for the entirety of it, today we are actually talking and diving into our current nutrition and training and our loose plans and outlooks for approximately the next 6 months. Before we jump into that, Brian, kick us off with some updates, please.
Yeah, I'm glad to get to us talking about training finally. And I also realized that I always start with, yeah, every time you kick that over to me for updates, it's like my first word every time is, yeah. And then I get into whatever I was going to say. So maybe I can just delete the yeah and just get into what I'm supposed to say. So we are just coming out of some really shitty weather here in San Diego, which in Boulder, there was like a 63 degree day with like beautiful sun, no clouds or anything. And we were like 52 and freezing rain. Yesterday it turned around and it looks like everything's going to be like high 50s, low 60s for the foreseeable future, which is fine. Like, I don't think you come to San Diego for like high 50s, but at least it's sunny and there's not rain. And so you just kind of dress appropriately and stay outside, you know, it's all good. So on that note, Bryson and I finally, after like 4 days of not being able to bike ride because of all this rain, he was itching. And we went for a massive ride yesterday. It's the longest he's ever made it, 7.5 miles. We went all the way to the end of the bay path where it converges with the ocean. And you know where all those volleyball courts are on the like the far side of the ocean path? There's like 50 volleyball courts or something. We biked all the way to there on the bay, and then we circled back around and took the ocean path down to PB Drive and then back up. So 7.5 miles, kid crushed it, got his new bike, really amped, just super cool that he was able to deal with all the people traffic on there and make a really cool outing out of it. I have a couple other things to say, but what's going on with you? I know you have a birthday coming up too.
Yes. Which I'll touch on here in a second, but it reminded me like for Bryson, that was like, that had to be like the adventure of a lifetime. Like, yeah. And I remember, you know, when I was young, like being able to go like outside the immediate area on like on the bike is, it's like I felt like I was like 18 years old and an adult. Like, we are so far from home on this bike. Like, he was probably thrilled. Like, that will probably be like a legit memory of his on that massive bike ride, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, I agree. It's like a feeling of freedom for him, because I feel like as a 5-year-old, you're oftentimes constrained by other people's expectations of you all the time. And when he gets on the bike, it's just more or less just go. And he's like singing and dancing on his bike and like, you know, weaving between people and just, yeah, he's in heaven. Good. That's a good point. Bring that up.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I remember the one bike trip that I did when I was maybe like 8-ish, something like that, before, you know, when I was still like child, not quite like becoming like a bigger kid. And like, it's still like a very profound memory of being able to ride on this like bike path sort of thing, super far from home. Which is cool. So I kind of jumping over to me, there's one other thing. Oh, the weather here has been horrendous. Insane rain, crazy thunderstorms, like so bad that they kind of scare you a little bit, because the wind's blowing so hard, the like doors are shaking and like crazy thunder and stuff, and like rain, like it sounds like there's like people up like punching the roof. Like, that's how gnarly the rain is. And it's like, it's wild. Like, when the tropical storms are just like, they hit different than when you're in like, you know, mainland US. So it's been, quite rainy here and unpredictable. That's the biggest thing, because like, it can be kind of okay And then you see that the clouds roll in like 20 minutes and you're in like a world of shit sort of thing.
Is it rainy season right now?
It is. It's wet season. Yeah. And then like the week before it had like finally kind of opened up and was nicer and stuff. And we're like, oh, maybe it's kind of over. And then it like the last couple of days, it's been insanely rainy again. But it's like kind of hit or miss. You can have a great, you know, nice day. And then like 3 o'clock, it just rolls in. Or what ends up happening is like early mornings or at the night times when it really does hit. Now with that, I have a birthday this weekend on Saturday. I'll be 35. And Jenny and I are going to Komodo Island National Park to see some Komodo dragons, which I am
nice.
Insane. Like to talk about, like I just said about these like profound memories as a child. I literally do feel that way. We were at our last place. It was more of like an apartment building when we were here last year, and we were had to do something in like the main office, and they had all these like books and stuff out on the table, and we were waiting, and I was like looking at one. And it like dawned on me as I'm looking at this book that like Komodo Island, where the Komodo dragons live, like is in Indonesia, and it's like a couple islands over. I was like, oh my God, like we have to go. So I've been like talking a lot about it a lot, and Jenny kind of planned a trip for my birthday. So I am like giddy about it. It just seems like there's these crazy, you know, literally like dinosaurs that kill anything that comes near them. And like I'm going to be able to go see them like in person. And one of the best things I'm super excited for is it's not going to be in like a zoo setting where they're on the other side of like a 12-inch thick concrete wall and glass. Like they're just roaming and you get to go to the park and there's like a guide you get to make sure that you know, don't get eaten. But it's not going to be like super Western protected, safe sort of thing. It's a little bit like they're on the island and you're like hiking around on the island as well. So I'm very excited about that.
That is actually really cool. I hope you get some cool video and images of it to share. And also, is that really the only place in the world that the Komodo dragons are on that one island?
Well, I mean, I think in this, they may be in like zoos somewhere.
Well, yeah, I'm sure. But I mean, they're indigenous to that area.
Yes. Only. Yep. This one islander, and they maybe have made it to like one of the other nearby islands. I'm not like insanely brushed up on my Komodo dragon facts, but they are on this, like this one island.
That's legit. Cool.
Yeah. And then I just have two other kind of small updates. I have found an egg whites supplier here. I am through the moon. Like every morning I crack 5 eggs, and with at least 3 of them, I'm doing the stupid little fucking egg whites dance and hoping that it doesn't like, I don't miss, which I do like probably 20% of the time. And then I've obviously get shells in it and all this stuff. And I am so excited to not have to do that anymore. So,
yes.
One of my friends here, Matt, was like, oh, you don't know the egg white guy? I was like, no, there's an egg white guy. And that's how it is here. Like an island, like there's like a guy for or a woman, you know, whatever. There's a sole resource for all these different things. So can get those delivered now. And I was kind of joking off air. Mine was still frozen, so I didn't get to use it this morning. But tomorrow morning, I will be using it for sure.
Love that.
And then lastly, I PR'd my heart rate during my last Thursday cardio session. So I finally reached the 180 mark from the math, that very, you know, back of the napkin max heart rate math should put me at a 185. Yeah. And I know that's obviously quite it's not a firm concrete thing, but I'm getting close to within peaking that, which I'm not necessarily sure if that is a good thing or not. To be pushing over the max heart rate. But a kind of really quick funny story is in my like final semester in college, I had to pick up extra classes because to like get my financial aid, I had to be full-time student, but I had already had enough credits to kind of graduate. So I picked up extra classes in one of them for whatever reason, I don't know why, but it was called physical conditioning. And it was literally just like HIIT cardio and hill sprints and all this crazy shit this teacher would make us do. And I had to get like a heart rate strap and everything like that. And as a 21-year-old senior in college, who's basically just been like drinking and lifting weights for 4 years, it was pure hell. But I would routinely push over that max heart rate threshold. And we'd be like, after the session, she would have us like run some calculations on like, you know, with our calculators and stuff like that. And I remember it would be like 208, 209 half the time. And I'm like, okay, I'm 21 years old. You know, that would put me at like a, you know, 198, 199. And I would be like every class well above that max heart rate threshold. So it's kind of funny looking back on that and having some just, I guess, like PTSD of those classes, which were awful.
You should do the same thing you did to get your heart rate that high and see what it gets to now.
I you know, I couldn't do it. You know, like I could not do that without the, like that, the only reasons I didn't drop that class was like a pure ego standpoint. And I needed to keep that class so that I could keep all of my full-time student credits and get my financial aid for my final semester of college. But I mean, it was pure hell. And like every class, I'm like, why the fuck did I sign up for this class? Like I could have picked anything. And I was like, yeah, right. Physical conditioning. That sounds awesome.
I took coaching football as a senior to get credits, and it was awesome. It was literally like taking you through the steps from the beginning on how to learn to be a coach and design like plays and an offense and a defense and all that stuff. Is pretty sweet.
That is a much better idea than mine.
yeah, totally. Well, anyway, so switching gears to lower intensity cardio. So when we're talking about zone two, I know that it is meant to be done continuous on one piece of equipment where you just get in the zone and you just have to stay there. But my personality doesn't do super well with cardio, and I've been hammering zone two for like a number of months now, consistently on like a single modality piece of equipment. And so I broke the rules the other day. And I think that because I had so much time doing zone two monostructurally on a single piece of equipment, and I was so good at knowing what that heart rate kind of feels like for me, I did a circuit CrossFit-y type thing, functional fitness-y or whatever, and I was able to keep my heart rate in zone two the entire time. It was between 130 and 147 the whole time. And that's extremely challenging. I actually don't think there's too many people that could do a circuit workout and keep their heart rate so consistent throughout the whole thing. I had to be, so I did 5 burpee pull-ups, 20 shuttle runs, 30 feet each way, and 10 calories on the air bike. And I had to do 1 burpee pull-up like every 8 to 10 seconds. I did my shuttle runs. I mean, it must have been like a 12 or 13 minute mile, just like casually going through it. And then I got on the Airdyne bike and held about 200 watts for a minute, and that would get me 10 calories. But I just repeated that over and over and over for 10 rounds, and it was 40 minutes, and my heart rate was in zone two the whole time. And so I feel like I'm probably going to incorporate some more stuff like that. I feel like the fact that I can keep my heart rate that consistent warrants it to be at least almost as good. Like I still don't think I'm doing the full thing like that zone two is meant to do per se. So I do intend to still do some of those more single modality sessions as well. But this was just way more entertaining. Just to be able to like do something for a minute or two and then do something else for a minute or two was really sweet. So anyways, I think that was cool for me to find out. And I look forward to potentially throwing in some more creative stuff like that too. Cause I also enjoy that process of like creating them versus just being like, hey, 45 minutes on the bike. But anyways, that's pretty much it for my updates. I have like some other stuff about my hamstring that I feel like I can include in the discussion around my training. But why don't we kick it over to you and hear a little bit about your current program?
Yeah, so I'll kind of start with my goals and then how the nutrition and training and programming comes into that. And so with kind of backing up a little bit, so I had in the fall of 2021 when we were living in Utah, had like my best physique ever. Super lean, but kept a really good amount of muscle there. It was obviously coming off of a pretty good, you know, gaining season. I got up to about 208 pounds and then dieted down. And then just the combination of, I think, like, I loved the gym there in Utah. We were going hiking and stuff like that. And it was a really great, fun environment for me. Best physique ever. Was pretty proud of that there. And then last year, just did not do as good. And I think I've touched on this on the podcast before. Got down to the same weight and was like not nearly as lean and was like, oh wow, I like botched this year. This was a learning year sort of thing. So that was kind of a frustration, I would say, because at this long playing this game, like it is an entire year to go through that cycle again and then get there, you know, sort of thing. So this year, the goal was to beat my best physique and kind of make sure that that doesn't happen again. So with anything, like when going somewhere new, right, I'm a big fan of hiring a coach, right, to really protect me from myself, right, my habits, my second guessing, those sorts of things. So I hired Jackson, and what I was really excited for is like, all I got to do is show up, eat the food, lift the weights, and someone else makes the decisions sort of thing. So food is high-ish, 3,200 calories right now, with the goal of reclaiming all the lost, you know, muscle mass from the previous year's diet. Maybe if we can get lucky, adding a little bit of new kind of muscle mass with a top end kind of body weight approximation goal around like 208 pounds. So a little bit like the last one, but I have, fortunately, you know, checking photos from that last kind of season, and things are looking good comparatively, which is fun. So I'm like high 204s, low 205s right now. Body composition is improved over the last time food was going up, and I was coming up through that 204, 205. And we will see how things go over the next maybe like month or 6 or 7 weeks or something like that to put on those last few pounds. And then kind of with my nutrition there, this is the first time, I think, kind of in potentially forever, I was trying to think back before the podcast, that I've ever kind of just followed a meal plan straight by the book. And that so far I've been really enjoying it. And I guess the reason being is like those decisions are made for me. It's not like a, oh fuck, I have, you know, 60 grams of carbs left and I don't have any carbs in the house sort of thing. When there's more decisions to be made, you have to really rely on yourself to be able to think in advance to make sure that you're adequately prepared for that. And because the decision-making process is so much less, like I know, okay, like Mondays, Thursdays, and like, you know, Saturdays, whatever, I hit the grocery store. These are the things that I order. I have things being delivered to the house from our friends, Matt and Henham, that run a place here called Macro Kitchen. They cook all my meat for me and some of my vegetables and stuff like that. So that's like already decided, taken care of, like portioned. And that's been really, really fun to like not have to worry about that, which has been really, really cool. And then we are taking a higher protein feeding frequency. So really kind of maximizing that muscle protein synthesis pathway of, you know, 35, 40 grams of protein distributed every like 3 to 4 hours throughout the day. And so far it's been, I mean, I wouldn't say eye-opening, but to have someone else say, hey, this is the plan, this is what we're doing, it's just easier to buy into it. And what I've noticed is like we're able to get more out of less food anecdotally doing this. So like the last time, you know, I was 204 pounds, there was like two smoothies per day, like blending oats and those sorts of things. And each meal was like really, really large, but I was only doing like four and a half meals per day. But now that I'm doing essentially six with some like post-workout stuff, my digestion is much, much better. And I'm not feeling like that really bloated, full, low energy from taking in 1,000 calories post-training or anything like that. And I've really, really been enjoying that part of it as well.
So you're basically eating like a bro. You have a meal plan. You're not IIFYMing it, and you're back to eating six meals a day. So like you just could have stayed in, you know, the early 2000s and hung out there, man.
You know what? Something that's really, really funny is the deeper I go into, or I should say the longer I go through this career path and stuff like that, I often find myself like sitting back and having these realizations that like bodybuilders a lot of times already have the things solved. And they're just like kind of ahead of the game. And like, what was really funny is in the beginning, when I was first getting into this, like I thought meal plans were really stupid and I would, you know, never do that and that sort of thing. And that the six meals per day is completely unnecessary. And I would never say that it is necessary, but it can work better if it fits, if you're able to fit it into like lifestyle and schedule and that sort of thing. But it is kind of funny. And I've had that realization like multiple times, like bodybuilders kind of figured it out a while back.
With training too, like bench presses and squats with no lockout at the top, you're biasing the length in position, you know, they got it, man. I mean, there's definitely some things that I think we've improved upon, but shit, 80-90% of it, nothing new there.
Yeah.
Should I jump into some nutrition stuff real quick or are you continuing?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. And then we'll touch training.
So with my nutrition here, at least for the next 5 weeks, I don't have a scale, not like a food scale, which I also don't have, but like a body weight scale. And I've religiously been weighing myself every morning because it's part of my off season satiety tracking thing where I track my daily body weight, my protein grams, and subjective satisfaction, underfed, overfed, or satisfied. So all I'm doing now is tracking subjective satiety and ballpark protein grams. And so when I'm in San Diego, that's what I'm doing. And I am just going to more or less eat to fulfillment. I'm going to try to have most of the days be satisfied and have like maybe an overfed day and an underfed day each week. So in theory, I would then go back to Boulder at about the same weight I am now. But I'm kind of confused because a lot of the smart device things that are telling me that I am losing weight, and that would be like a lower resting heart rate, higher HRV numbers, increased VO2 max. But the other thing that could increase all of those things is doing cardio. And so I'm a little bit torn at this point as to whether I am in fact losing body weight or whether I'm just seeing adaptations from doing the cardio. So I think this is actually really cool. I'm excited to see what my body weight is in 5 weeks without seeing it for 5 weeks and just kind of see how accurate my assessments of satiety are throughout the spreadsheet over the 5 weeks. So yeah, that'll be cool. And the goal is mostly, you know, to maintain. And then after that, I think I've decided not to do my spring cut officially this year. I've been leaning that way. I've kind of flirted with that on the podcast here before. And I want to continue doing my cardio stuff. And I want to make sure that I'm properly fueling my cardio stuff so that it has as minimal impact as possible on my weight training. And I think that it's possible and possibly even likely that I will lose a little bit of weight just by prioritizing more cardio and then having the summer months come where in general, my body tends to want to lose weight in the summer as I'm more active, getting more steps in, things like that. So I think that that's what's going to happen, but I'm not going to intentionally try to lose weight. I'm just going to fuel the cardio, fuel the training. And I'm actually really excited this year to have a year off of dieting and doing that whole posting my body weight every day on Instagram thing. I feel like free already that I made this decision. I'm like, yes, I just gained like 3 months in my life. So I'm really excited about that. And yeah, we'll get into training stuff here. But if you have anything else to add, go for it.
I do. The first thing was I am very curious to see what happens with the body weight over these 5 weeks. I was kind of thinking about it and I'm just really excited to see what's going to happen, you know, because you're like, I'm just leveraging subjective cues and satiety, and I'm just going to like see what happens. I would say, like, thinking to myself, and I've touched on this, I believe, in the podcast before, like, years of tracking my food. And then even before that, you know, through all our, like, the heavy days of CFPB, like, pushing food so much, I have really, like, I shouldn't say broken, but, like, dramatically misconfigured my satiety and hunger cues. And I would say, like, if I did that myself and tried to, like, remove myself from my schedule, my weight would just start tanking. Like the days, like, sometimes when I have an off day, like, I'll go like 6 hours without a meal, and it's almost like a relief, you know? And I would, like, I think I would very just fall by the wayside of not eating past, like, breakfast. I would probably eat breakfast at like 7 a.m. I might not have another meal till like 3 or 4, sort of thing. And then you can only play so much catch up,
right?
Kind of there. But it was kind of like had me thinking for like longer term, you know, what might happen. And that's something that I'm sure we'll touch on more. And then the other thing I wanted to say about your diet. Yeah. I think that will be really, or the not diet, I should say. I was agreeing with when my thoughts were going that way, is like, just from all this cardio exploration that you're doing, you will probably just settle in to a little bit leaner through more activity, and leveraging your kind of, your three tier, relative satiety, kind of, model at the end of each day. I'm excited to see what happens with that too.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be a fun different year. Like, first time in 4 years I haven't done this. So yeah, it'll be cool. It'll be a fun summer, you know, enjoy some of the freedoms that summer and spring provide. So yeah, I'm excited about it. What is going on in training for you?
Yeah. So kind of like I said before, when I am with a coach, I just like to go all in, right? And I say, treat me like a regular client, assume that I don't know very much, because as much as I want the fruits of the labor of coaching, I want insight into see how other people's, you know, brains work and stuff like that, so that I can make sure that I'm doing the best that I can as a coach, you know? So when I signed up with Jackson, I said, take over training, right? I'll follow it, sort of thing. And he, I don't want to speak for him, but when what we're doing with me, I should say, is a much lower volume, very, very high intensity program. And I have been really, really enjoying it. So we'll have like a few intensity techniques, like per session, generally like rest pause style. I think I only have maybe like one or two drop sets in the entire week. But I do really enjoy kind of the rest pause style. And the reason I would say I've been enjoying it so much is because, like, with the top set approach, like, you get one set, you know, and that brings out like just a better focus, you know, in like my phone is in focus mode every training session. I know, like, well before that, before I start that set, this is how many reps I got last week. Like, this is my target. And I know I'm going to be like pushing, you know, very, very close in proximity to failure, pretty much like RIR of one or less on movements that I can, like, kind of safely, go to failure on. And it just, like, it's made training so much more mental than it had been in the past. And that kind of bridging between the mental and physical is huge. Like the arousal for a set, knowing, you know, that each rep has to be performed with precise precision, and you can't misgroove it. Because if you misgroove at like a RIR 3, that turns into like an RIR 0 pretty much, you know, sort of thing, maybe 1. And you botch that set for the week. So that has been like really, really fun for me. And I know that, you know, historically in the past, when I had done 3-4 exercises per movement, you just can't, I shouldn't speak for other people, I cannot bring that same level of focus, knowing that I have, like, okay, 160 pounds, like, I'm doing it on this set. And then in two more sets, I'm doing that 160 pounds again. It almost, like, I kind of will sandbag the earlier sets by proxy of knowing that I still have to do it like a few more times, where this way I know I'm like, there's one pitch coming and I'm swinging for the fences like every time. I do really enjoy that from a mental and effort aspect.
Dude, I couldn't agree more. Like, I think you may have just convinced me to think about reducing some of my volume on some movements, because I have the superset that I'll get into, but it's the leg extension to sissy squat superset. And man, if I didn't sandbag the shit out of the first round of that today, because I knew I had a second round. I ended up realizing after the superset, I was like, I can do more weight on the leg extension and I can do more weight on the sissy squat, but I definitely wasn't going to do that twice. So I did like a lighter first set to save it up for the second set. And so maybe it just would have been better if I would have done even heavier of each and just done one round of that thing. And it probably would have been sufficient to cause the stimulus that I want. So like, I totally get it. Okay. So real quick to dig into some of what you said, talk to me about these rest pause sets. Are they on, like, what types of movements are they on? Are they on the demanding like hack squat or RDL stuff? I would guess not, probably more on some of the other movements.
Yeah. So for example, like the leg extension, I have like a one top set of like a 10 to 15, and then back off at like 75 to 80%. Obviously some movements that's going to be a little bit higher, some movements that's going to be a little bit lower depending on the rep range. And then like with a rep target of like 12 for that, and then two kind of like rest pause sets at that back off weight. Mm-hmm. And then for me, you know, my rest pause sets, I think the most I might have like three, and on the week, and some of them are performance dependent, right? If you can get more than like three reps, keep going. But once you can only get three reps, like you're kind of done. Yeah. And like, let's say for example, like yesterday was the leg extension back off rest pause. I was able to get 12, at the back off weight, and then 15 seconds rest. I could only get like, I think five, and then another 15 seconds, I could only get three. So like we're done there. And at that point, I want to be done. It doesn't feel nice.
So you just did 10 to 15 reps and then you dropped the weight like 20 or 25% and you only got 12?
And that it's what's really wild is I have found that like consistently. And this like we kind of knew from my like historical performances when we would do some of the like, you know, in our CrossFit days when you would program stuff where like we would do, I forget, but it was like, you know, 85% of like your one rep max or whatever. And I'm making these numbers up, but like the rep target was like, okay, like 7 to 9, and I would only be able to get like 2 or 3. And it was like my drop off is quite vast. For example, like the hack squat, you know, when I was still at the other gym, I could do like 180 kilos for 10 reps, right? And then I would do my back off and I would put it to like 150 kilos and I would only get like 9 reps, you know? So it's just like that first all out set really takes it out of me. And I'm taking over 3 minutes, you know, before the next set. So it's not like I do feel like recovered, but once I get into it, like it just really slows from a performance standpoint.
I'd be curious at some point, if you ever do this, to try that same experiment, but take like 5 or 6 minutes of rest. Cause I find like when I do two sets of my big compound movements, and I do find that 3 minutes is just not enough. Their rep drop off would be significant, or I would have to drop a lot of weight, but I can maintain the same weight and only lose a rep. So it could go from like 9 to 8 with the same weight if I rest for like 5 or 6 minutes between the sets. And I mean, it's probably unnecessary. Like you're getting the same stimulus to the muscle. Like the muscle doesn't know. So I feel like you're probably, as long as you're approaching the same RIR, like it's probably the same to your muscles. So there's no reason you like have to do this, but I would be curious if you ever do.
Yeah. I mean, I could, for some of the bigger ones, I could easily do that. I mean, what's it add 3 minutes to my entire workout, right? Very simple.
So when you talk about that top set, back off set plus rest pause, is that specific to like more or less like less fatiguing movements? And then on the hack or an RDL, you're just doing one top set, or is there a back off set on that too?
Yep. Top set, back off set. And then some of them will have like a very large drop. Like the RDL has it. So like after the back off set, I'm stripping like half the weight from the back off and then getting like just taxing kind of like the almost like the metabolite pathway at that point, because the weight's really light, but you're quite fatigued. So generally when I do the RDL,
Give us real numbers. I need numbers of your top set, your back off set, and then the strip set.
Like loads.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So like the top set, I've been kind of gingerly with the RDLs because of my knee injury a few weeks ago, and like that stability still kind of makes it. So my top set is only at 130 kilos. Okay. And then the back off I've been doing at 100 kilos. Right. And then the strip set after that is literally like 60 kilos, like just the bar. Okay. And the
plate. Yeah. So you take one of the 45s off or whatever from the back off set.
Yeah. And when I perform that, like essentially drop after the back off, I'm only getting like 6 reps, and I'm like I'm there, and I always fail the concentric, and I'm like, it's not going, and everything.
And that's like, immediately after it's like 220 for 12 or 10 or whatever. And then you strip to 135 from there.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And in cool. that, I mean, I'm not going to say I enjoy that. It feels absolutely terrible. Same thing with the hack squat. Like, I'll do a very similar, like, you know, 50% kind of drop, and like, you can just feel the metabolite, you know, build up. And I'm like, the weight feels light. Like it's not, especially like you've just had, you know, 200 kilos on the hack squat. Like now I have, you know, whatever, like 60, 80, it feels light. But it's still not moving.
That's wild.
Yeah. And it feels terrible. And that one really is like a push until you kind of like quit sort of thing, because like they start jackhammering a little bit but the thing is now, like, I've been able to get so much quad stimulus out of such few movements. Like for a bit, for like the first few weeks, there is like a third leg exercise in there. I couldn't even do it because like my legs were so blown out already, like insane quad pumps. By the time I got done with the hack squat, the leg extension would be first. I would just like do my abs and calves and go home, and I would be really sore for like 2 days.
I wouldn't be able to do a third exercise with that type of intensity.
Yeah. And that's been like fun. Like I don't need it. So like at the new gym, because we don't have the leg extension and the hack squat, like just straight up isn't as good. I have been doing the third, and that's been a very cool, like real experiment into like, how much does the equipment like matter in the angle of the hack squat and stuff. And I found like, it really, really does. Like when you can have a completely flat foot, you know, heel pressure, toe pressure, all equal, and be at full knee flexion, ass to grass in the bottom of the hack squat, like the stimulus you can produce with that, with those angles, it is amazing. And then when you're on like a hack squat that only gets you 75% of the way there, 80% of the way there, like it is a noticeable, like reduction in stimulus on the day for sure.
Yeah, dude, I put on my story the other day, my perils with the Arsenal hack right now, because I couldn't get it to get to that perfect position that you're talking about, you know. And I actually had a really good suggestion from one of the people that follow me, but he said if I throw yoga blocks on the shoulder pads of the hack and then lower the foot plate down, because I had it super steep because it was the only way I'd be able to get to the bottom. But he's like, you know, with the yoga blocks, you can flatten out the foot plate so it looks more like a heel wedge or whatever, like a softer angle. And I think that's going to be dope. I just don't happen to have yoga blocks, so I'm going to have to like find some somewhere. But definitely going to look forward to trying that. Yeah, but I'm in San Diego. Like, do I really need to buy yoga blocks for like 4 weeks of training?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe I do.
Or you convince the owners at the gym, like, hey, we should get like an acetylene torch and cut these stops off at the bottom.
yeah, exactly. Totally. So tell the people what your split is.
Oh yeah, that was another part. I can't believe I forgot this. I'm really only training most things once per week, which is the first, like I am more or less kind of like on an intelligent bro split, and I haven't done this in years. I honestly thought that I would never train this way again. I did truthfully believe that. So Monday is legs, overwhelmingly quad dominant, right? I'm going to get some glute stuff from, you know, the large degree of ROM, but other than that, pretty much quads, calves and abs. The abs are generally like four sets per exercise that I have three times per week, but that's really because my abs suck so bad. Like I have like hanging leg raises. I'm only getting like by my third and fourth set, I'm only getting like six fucking reps. So like if I only had one or two sets, like I just can't get that much volume in because I'm such garbage at doing them. So that's Monday, the quad dominant split. Tuesday is a push day. So chest, lateral delts, anterior delts, triceps. Yes. Wednesday is then a pull session. So pretty much everything on the posterior side, upper. The pull day has abs again. Thursday is the cardio day. Friday will be the hamstring dominant day. So glutes, hamstring, calves, no quads really there. And if I'm being honest, like my quads are still maybe a little bit sore on that Friday. The Thursday cardio session really does help them. They feel so much better coming off the bike once the like blood pools out and everything like that, you know, but, that is a lower body hamstring focused day. And then Saturday is a mixed upper day with abs again. So pretty much one exercise per the larger muscle group. So I have like one chest, one back, and then I have two biceps on that day and no triceps.
So it is hitting the upper body twice. Because your arms are getting hit by auxiliary compound stuff anyways. So like that second day is more like a touch up than anything. Yeah. Cause you also don't want it. Yeah. Yeah. And then you don't have any ham stuff on your quad day and you don't have any quad stuff on your ham day.
No. And the thing is like, I wouldn't be recovered to do it. If I'm really being honest, I wouldn't.
Yeah. No, that's super interesting. I'm actually really excited to follow this experiment as well. Cause this is certainly unique. You're literally like, you're eating like a bro and you're training like a bro. And I'm envious, man. I loved those days. Bro splits were the best.
Yeah, it has been. At first I was like really nervous, mostly around my quads, right? It's like one of my biggest lagging body parts because I was literally 32 years old before I really learned how to train my quads like well. And I was like, I just don't know if it's going to be enough like frequency or are we going to regress? But like, no, I am just, like I said, swinging for the fences on those days. And thing is like, I was getting the big anxiety about it for a bit, but now that I'm like, you know, a number of weeks in, like that's just my Monday. You know what I mean? Like it's going to be hard. But I do enjoy really just showing up and trying really, really hard to beat the week before. And then I know I have literally like I have 6 days before I need to do it again, or essentially seven.
So wait, if that's Monday and you said your pull day is Wednesday, where's your push day?
Tuesday.
So you go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday all in a row?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I feel like whenever you'll have those things about like training 3 days in a row, like I can't relate. Like I feel great on that Thursday, Wednesday still. Like, and then, the cardio day is just kicking the nuts, but,
right.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's so interesting.
Yeah. Kind of what we talked about last week with the labs and stuff. I think cardio is just going to be in for me and I'm just going to have to get used to it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
But food is super high, right? Food's high, sleep's good. Like I'm recovering like really, really well. I have a lot of, you know, cards stacked in that part of the deck. So I would imagine maybe once we get into the deficit and that sort of thing, that will diminish there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, I am, as you guys may know, on a 9-day split because I just have to be different and not be on the calendar week. So the one super bro thing about my split is that I'm only training hamstrings once over the course of 9 days. Everything else is getting hit at least twice. But I just came off a year of basically doing hamstring prioritization, where volume and intensity and placement in the session and pretty much everything else was there to try to bring up the hamstrings. And I think it worked for the most part. Tough to say now, since I just was barely able to start training my right hamstring again after the injury 4 weeks ago. But I do feel like there was some progress there. The strength numbers went up too in hypertrophy rep ranges. And so that's sort of the best I can hope for. But the hamstring day specifically, because I wanted to talk about it in relation to the injury too. I got to try this hammer strength seated leg curl, and it was super fine. Tons and tons of tension up at the stretch position. When you lean forward, it doesn't quite bottom out. So if you're sitting back all the way, you know, your legs will, it'll hit the stopper as you try and go up. But when you lean forward and you lengthen the hamstring to start, I was just shy of being able to get it there. And it was super tension up there with a pretty lengthened overload. So it definitely had a little bit of drop off at the short position, which I love. Things just never feel great for me when it gets harder until the short position. And that's like the point of maximum tension. I guess because it doesn't really match the strength curve of the muscle super well. But I was able to this week train basically bilateral for the first time. I was doing all cautious single leg hamstring work up until this week. And so I did bilateral leg curl, bilateral 1.5 hip extensions. And I was even able to do RDLs with a barbell, which I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do. So kept that light at like 295 and did sets of 7, which was perfect. Tested the hamstring. It felt good. And I'm super duper sore in my hamstrings too. So when you were talking about not being recovered in time, like 4 days later for something, I've been experiencing a lot of that too. Because my hamstrings ubiquitously take a long time to recover. And this is even worse because I'm only training them every 9 days. Like, they're literally sore for over half that 9 day period. And then quads, I'm training twice and they're also getting super sore, but it's over a 9 day period. So it's like just enough time to train them again. So I have quads once. Actually, I'll just talk about my split real quick. I have torso push pull, plus some front delts. So that's basically back and chest and then a little bit of front delts. Then I have quads and biceps. And then I have another torso push pull day with some delts. And then I have hams and triceps. And then I have the specialization day. So it's just quads and shoulders, because this cycle is a quad and delt specialization cycle. As Bryson yells in the background. So the day that is just quads and delts only has for quads this superset that I mentioned, that's leg extension to sissy squat. And it is just so, so, so awful. And it actually got me sore, like literally two sets of that sequence got me sore for literally 4 days, to the point that I was just recovered in time to do my quad session when it came back around again. So that was gnarly. And so I feel like I'm just barely getting enough quad recovery with the 9 day cycle. And then that day also has more same muscle group supersets for the delts. So that day being just quads and delts, it has two, sequences for the delts, one that's a front delt rear delt combo and one that is lateral delt. So it's a Y raise to a dual cable lateral raise, which I love. That's an awesome superset. But I'm a fan of that day in general.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I remember when you first were putting it up, I'm like, man, a quads and delts specialization day, like, it just sounds fun. Like, I would, well, at least I think I would thoroughly enjoy it. Who knows once I got into it. But I feel like that would be a very, very cool day. And kind of like what you were saying with, you feel like you're just kind of recovering enough for that second quad day. Moving forward, do you think you might like reduce the sets of that, seated leg extension to sissy squat to like let's say you only did one set. Do you think that would improve maybe your recovery, or would you just like push it harder and it maybe end up being more of the same?
Yeah, I don't exactly know. I just did it today. So I'm going to see if repeated bout effect maybe makes me less sore, and then I could potentially use that information to decide, but that's a good question. And you're right. I don't know. Maybe pushing harder on one set would actually make me more sore. I don't exactly know. I had a really cool suggestion from Connor St. Jean. I don't know if you know him. He's kind of an
N1
bodybuilder guy. Yep. Yeah. So he wrote me today and he was like, dude, you should go back to the leg extension for partials after the sissy squat, make a cast set out of it. And I was like, man, that is genius. I like really, really should do this, but I'm definitely not doing this twice. So maybe like that is my cue to just make this one massive like top work set, like do some warm up sets, get super prepared. And then I have that one shot in the gun and I take the leg extension close to failure, the sissy squat close to failure, and then go back to the leg extension for some partials. That would rip me up. And I would really like the fact that I only have to do it once, because even leg extension to sissy squat twice is just like pretty daunting. But you can really mentally like go there one time and then it's kind of like repeating it. It's like, oh yeah, I think I can do this, but that's an interesting idea and something I'm definitely going to consider. I will update you guys if I end up doing that awful sequence. It sounds just so good and so bad at the same time. Yeah. Do you have anything there or should I just continue?
Yeah, continue, please.
Yeah. So what else was I going to say? I actually don't know. Oh yeah. So I have my one arm experiment still going on. And so I'm really excited for this to wrap up. April 9th, I think, is the 6 month mark. So I have a little over a month to go now and I'm just ready. Like I'm kind of bored of training one arm and getting a pump in one side and I want to see what my right arm is capable of. Like, honestly, I'm as much excited about the measurements that I'm going to do over the course of a few days for consistency's purposes as I am to see the strength comparison when I do the movements that I've been doing with my left arm only and then see how the right arm performs on those movements. I think that's going to be some cool, interesting data as well, because I feel like my left arm has improved in coordination and strength more than I think aesthetically per se. But I guess we'll have to just find out. And so I'm excited to get back to training both arms again. And then, I feel like I had something else to say on the training side, but it's escaping me at the moment. So I think that's all I really got.
I have a question about the arms. When you wrap up the 6 months, will you be back in Boulder or will you still be in San Diego?
I'll be back in Boulder.
Okay. Do you plan on getting a DEXA done at that time?
I do. I have one saved up. I bought a 2-pack. And so I had my DEXA done in August and I started this experiment in October. So the DEXA was just prior to the experiment. And then I'll do another DEXA at the end of the experiment before I start training my right arm again. And we'll see what the comparison is. And we'll also see if all this cardio that I've been doing has changed my body composition, muscle mass ratio at all in any way. Cause I'm kind of curious about that. Like one of the biggest concerns I have about doing all of this zone two is, muscle type conversion, like becoming a little bit more slow twitch, which is kind of, I kind of expect that to happen because those adaptations to cardio you have to gain slow twitch muscle fibers to get better at cardio. But I'm curious if that has any negative impact on the total amount of muscle mass that I have.
Yeah. I honestly don't have a clue there, but it will be very interesting to see that data. And I'm super glad we're going to get to talk about it on the podcast. I think that's going to be really cool. I don't have a clue. I really don't have a clue what's going to happen. Like I think the kind of the nihilist approach would be like, oh, doesn't matter. Like training your arms, you know, right. Don't matter.
Or doing cardio doesn't matter.
Yeah. But I'm very much like, but maybe we'll see, like maybe there's going to be like 3/4 of a pound difference in one arm versus the other. Like I'm just genuinely excited for once that concludes and we get some of that, the information on the back end of that.
I feel like my right arm had like a 1/2 pound more muscle or something on the original test. I feel like it was like 11.7 and 12.2 or something like that. So yeah, we'll have to see compared to that. It's gonna be super cool. But yeah, that's really all I have for training things. This cycle that I'm in is, oh yeah, I was going to talk about long-term, but this cycle I'm in is probably going to last for a while. I'm in like week 3 or 2 right now. And, so it's going to go at least 2 mesocycles. So that will probably take us through 4+ months and then into summer. So, yeah, I think for the most part, this will probably continue and, I will maybe do that leg extension, sissy squat leg extension tricep at some point and talk about it.
Yeah, I guess the last thing I'll wrap up with my training is as well, mine will stay the same for quite a while. And part of that reason too is like I just changed gyms like last week. So that does bring in a little bit of change. For example, yesterday, instead of doing the hack squat, I actually was on the Smith machine squat with like the hand, you know, the what do you call them? Like the straps, you know, sort of thing in my holy shoes, because I wanted to really get a fully lengthened position. So that one may stay in. And then I may be changing gyms again in like a month or so when this other gym gets all their arsenal equipment in that they've been waiting on for like 6 months. So those little kind of differences in and of enough create at least like a week or two of floating data of, okay, these are my new positions on these, you know, machines and stuff. So I anticipate running this for quite a while. And while the progress is still happening, like I'm very big on like, hey, it's not broken. I'm still enjoying the shit out of it. I want to see how far I can kind of push it. But yeah, that's about it for my training. And maybe in 6 months, so, you know, kind of maybe around September-ish, we will have a follow-up on this episode to see how things have transpired for us over those 6 months.
I love that. It'll be a biannual segment.
Yeah, perfect.
All right.
Anything else to wrap this one up, Brian?
Nah, it's good, man. Yeah.
Cool. As always, guys, thank you for listening. Brian and I will talk to you next week. Thank you so much for listening to Eat, Train, Prosper. If you found this episode valuable, please subscribe or share us with your friends. You can find more from Aaron at StrakerNutritionCo.com and more from Brian at EvolvedTrainingSystems.com. Talk to you guys next time.